Welcome to the Unsightly American Soccer Podcast. I'm your host, Hal Phillips. We have a real treat for you today. In addition to a chat with our regular Tom Wadlington, we are speaking to Stephen Myers on subjects Spanish and further afield in the Latin soccer arena. Live from San Francisco, he'll come to us, I believe, right after the Mexico-France match, which is now at halftime. Interesting time in the tournament. We've seen every team play. We're on the eve of the U.S.-Slovenia game, and we'll talk about that. But by now, we have a pretty good sense, or at least some sense, of what each team is bringing to the game here. Some of that has been a surprise. Some has not. We'll go through it all. Next.
Hello, Tom speaking.
Tom, it's Hal.
How about them Greeks?
The Greeks chiseled that game.
Up the Greeks.
Oh.
I
feel so bad for the Nigerians. They really got screwed.
Why?
Oh, did you not watch it?
No, nothing.
Well, Nigeria was up 1-0 with about, 35 minutes gone in the first half, and we're cruising. The Greeks looked horrible. And then there was a little tussle over on the sideline, and some idiot Nigerian whose name is Keita sort of pushed and kicked out at this Greek guy who, I think got brushed by the foot, but of course collapsed in a heap.
All right.
Keita got thrown out. So now Nigeria is down to 10 men, and the Greeks throw on another striker. They scored a tie at halftime. They score in the second half and win the game.
Wow. But how good do you feel for those Greeks who have never had a goal in the World Cup before?
I don't care. They're the worst team in this group, and now they have a chance to go through because they play Argentina in the last group game, and Argentina has nothing to play for.
Right. Well, that's the way the cookie crumbles, isn't it?
It is. It's just I feel like the Nigerians got chiseled. It was a dodgy decision. It was a clear embellishment by the Greek guy, and I thought that they could easily have gotten away, or the ref could have gotten away with giving him a yellow card for unsportsmanlike conduct. There wasn't he didn't strike him or attempt to strike him. It was a shove.
Yeah, but think about the owners of Nick's Pizza. Don't you think they're happy today?
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah, I mean, they've made a great pizza for years and years, and you have to think about them as well.
You know, Tom, that's why I like talking to you. You always take the larger view.
We can't think about the pure cheating and unfair aspects of the World Cup games. That's not the only way to look at it.
So, biggest disappointment of the World Cup so far?
Is that the African teams are not good at all.
Well,
Ghana. Cheggers says Ghana is going all the way.
Cheggers, of course, is one of Tom's Fulham friends. I think that, Ghana looked better than we thought, but honestly, it wouldn't surprise us if they went out in the round of 16. That they're better than we thought they'd be because they're actually pretty good without Essien.
Right, of course. But what you mean to say is they were good in one game.
Yes.
Which means they'll likely be shit the next game.
But they did completely blow your pre-tournament dark horses out of the water. Serbians looked horrible against Ghana.
Yeah, Serbians looked horrible, but they had a man tossed out, and really that game should have been a nil-nil draw, right?
Well, I don't know. The guy wasn't tossed out very early in the game, and it certainly killed it for them. I mean, he got tossed out in the 70th minute or something like that. They had yet to score to that point. And Ghana had already scored, if I'm not mistaken.
It's funny. I'm here in the elevator. That was interesting. There's a little, not a TV, but a screen that has news flashing from around the world. And it just said, while the U.S. Wouldn't be devastated with a draw, Slovenia will clinch a second round berth with a victory tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think that we've traded a couple emails about the tactics in this game, and this is really where tournament football gets really fun.
Very interesting.
It is, yeah. The party line up to now has been, the Slovenes are going to let the Americans come to them because they have won a game, and that the U.S. has to win this game in order to basically qualify at the Slovenians' expense, and that is true. But if you are a Slovene and you have a choice and you know you have to get points from a game against the U.S. or England, who are you going to try to get those points from?
You want the points tomorrow against the U.S.
Exactly. So I think we're going to see a pretty open game.
I hope so. The Slovenia that I saw against Algeria was pretty poor, I have to say. But having said that, I probably have just cursed the U.S. to lose tomorrow. Honestly, as somebody said, one of the U.S. players, Donovan, I believe, was on videotape saying, listen, if we can't beat Slovenia, we don't deserve to go on in the World Cup.
Well, he's exactly right. The Slovenians are not a bad team, and there's certainly no pushovers, but exactly right. And if the U.S. can't win this game on a neutral field against Slovenia, they don't deserve to be one of the 16 teams left. And if you did watch the Algerian game, there was nothing to choose between those two teams. They were both horrible, and the goal that Slovenia scored, I could have saved it.
Horrible. Just poor.
Well, obviously, a very big day in the history of U.S. soccer tomorrow. A very important game, in a way that I don't think that we could point to a single game at 2006 World Cup. Once the U.S. lost that first game, they were always behind the eight ball. I think their second game in that tournament was against Italy.
Italy, yeah.
And they battled and got a point to make the last game at least meaningful. I think if they had beaten Ghana, they would have gone through or had a chance to. But they are in a driver's seat position here for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, so you're exactly right. They actually had a chance in the Ghana match last World Cup to win and move on to the second round, despite a humbling 3-0 loss to Czech Republic in the first game. But tomorrow will be a big moment where, if they win 2-0, 3-0, whatever it is, if they get 3 points, it's going to signal that maybe they're a team to be reckoned with and a dangerous team for someone to play in the second round.
I think that's true, but even more important, the U.S. has a very bad habit of completely bonking on the third game in these round-robin matches. If you think back to 2002, they opened the tournament with a shellacking of Portugal and then tied the host team, South Korea, which turned out to be a semifinalist, two tremendous results, and then they ended up, they had the whole thing in their hands and lost to Poland 3-1 and got in by the skin of their teeth.
Right.
So they were very lucky to advance. So that's two straight World Cups where we've had a chance to do great things in the final match and completely laid eggs. So I would like to take care of our business against Slovenia.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing you have to remember is even if we beat Slovenia tomorrow, we go into the final game against Algeria, and we want to get 3 points, and we want to score goals because we want to finish first in the group to avoid Germany in the next round.
Well, this is the huge part. I mean, we do have a chance because we got that draw with England to win this group if we can put some goals up. You don't want to get ahead of yourself and try to talk about goal differential when you're just looking for results. But they do have a chance to go in and play, Ghana. Instead of West Germany, and I think that although the Ghanaians are good, that is a preferable matchup.
Yes, and let me just say first off that there is no West Germany anymore. But your point is well taken. Germany is likely to finish first in that group, and what American soccer fan would relish the opportunity to say the U.S. finished first in their group with England in the World Cup?
I like that. You know what I also like, though, is the chance to play the Germans again after they snuck away with a 1-0 victory against us in 2002, one that I don't know that they deserved.
Right, right. Well, let's bygones be bygones and take the highly erratic and unpredictable Ghanaians instead of the highly predictable and let me think of another word. I was going to use an appropriate one that had to do with fascism, but the Germans are to be reckoned with.
Yeah, I think that I was going to ask you what team was struck you as being a lot better than you expected, and I would put the Germans in that group. I know it's only one game, and they played Australia, who were horrible, but a completely different type of German team this year.
Yeah, I think they look very good, but, you know, South Korea looks very good in their first game as well, right?
They lost this morning to Argentina.
Yeah, and you knew they were going to lose to Argentina. I'm going to stick with Spain, even though they lost the other day, yesterday.
Not exactly a mystifying result. I mean, the Swiss were very straightforward in what they were trying to do. They scored on the counter. I think they would have taken a 0-0 draw, but I'm not so worried about that yet. And they can still win the group, which would because if they don't win the group, don't they get Brazil in the first in the round of 16?
That's correct. So you're looking at if Spain finishes second and Brazil finishes first, they meet in the second round, which will be a big, big match.
The other team that I thought is a lot better than we've I'll say two teams: Chile and Uruguay looked very good.
Yes.
Chile really knocked the ball around very, very well in their victory against, you know, Honduras. Obviously not top-ranked competition, but still, you can see why they finished second in South American qualifying. I mean, they really looked complete and attacking and hard. But, geez, Uruguay comes out, and they obviously decided that France was the best team in their group. They went for a 0-0 draw in their opening match against them. They did it, and then they dismantled South Africa, to the chagrin of an entire nation last night.
Again, South Africa is a pretty poor team, but Chile and Uruguay look very good so far. It'll be interesting to see how far they can go. I'm not sure either one of them will get to a quarterfinal.
I don't know. I haven't seen Chile have to do much else but beat Honduras yet. Obviously, they've only played one match, but the Uruguayans impressed me with you know, they've always been able to defend, and I don't think anyone's surprised that they were able to shut out France and probably could shut out anybody they liked if they really put their minds to it. But they have three excellent strikers. They have Forlan, who's playing fabulous, this guy Suarez, who was the leading scorer in the Dutch league for Ajax, and then they brought this dude Kavin off the bench as a third striker against South Africa. He should have had a couple of goals. He really whiffed on one, but played very well. That's three striking options that, geez, the U.S. can't say that they have that.
No, we're not the strongest as far as our strikers, but we have some midfielders who can score goals as well, which might make up for that. Hopefully it will tomorrow.
Everyone picks on France. They really crapped on them, but, you know, Uruguay didn't want to play in that match. Did you see Uruguay played three guys straight across the back, and then two stoppers? They played five guys on defense, you know, in that entire match, and they only played one striker.
Right, right. And of course, you have to mention North Korea's defensive valiant effort against Brazil, and they did score a goal for the first time ever. That was an interesting tactical approach to playing a better team when you get eight guys behind the ball and at the top of the box defending.
That may have been one of the moments of the World Cup so far for me, was the introduction of the lineups during the Brazil-North Korea match. You've got the whole Samba crowd going nuts for the Brazilians, of course, which is always a good time. But then you've got the North Korean national anthem being played, and there were several players who were in tears. They were so emotionally amped up, you know, by the experience, and maybe they were thinking about their dear leader. And then they cue to the crowd, where there's about 35 Chinese that have been employed to root for the North Koreans in South America, South Africa. It was incredible.
Yeah, that was definitely a highlight moment, without a doubt. How many of those North Korean players do you think were crying because they want to stay in South Africa or any other country that will take them?
I don't know. But on that note, we thank Tom Wadlington for his time, and we move west. Stephen Myers on the line, or will be shortly. So, what do you think of that match?
Well, I was able to start watching at the 30th minute, so I didn't see the three opportunities. Very much because, you know, out here particularly, Hal, with, the great population of La Raza, with the work I do as a public school teacher in San Francisco and in the Mission District all the time, and, hey, man, I just want great things happening for the Mexican national team as well. And it'd be nice to hear your opinion on this. You know, France shouldn't have even been in the bloody tournament in the first place.
Well, that's a good point. They sort of weaseled their way in. Although, if you were a neutral and you said, who would I rather have in the tournament from a competitive standpoint, the Irish or the French? Well, this was the finalist in two of the last three World Cups. You want
the
French.
True.
They laid an
that's
egg.
True. Well, that's true. But Ireland, I wasn't able to see the game. I just saw repetitions of the finish. But Ireland, from everyone I spoke to, was the better team in the match, the more deserving team. They were outplaying France.
Well, they scored a goal in Paris. They weren't outplaying France. And it's not like the goal that Henri made possible via his handball. This is a famous incident now, of course.
Two handballs on the one play.
That's right? True. That's true. The play, the goal that was enabled by this chicanery, malevolent chicanery, some would say, that goal didn't keep Ireland from going. That goal kept the game from going into extra time. And so it's not a guarantee that the Irish would have gone if that didn't happen. The French were playing at home. And again, if you had to lay money on who's going to prevail in extra time and penalty kicks, who are you going to pick? France or Ireland? Come on now.
Well, wait a minute. Okay, that was the goal of victory. That gave them the victory. It prevented the game from going into extra time.
Yes.
It happened in the 90th minute, more or less.
No. It was maybe 75, 80.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah. Hi, folks. Breaking the action here. Sorry for that. Well, you didn't hear it. A very long digression. Quite interesting, but not germane to the World Cup or football in any way. But we do come back to it by talking about George Foster, 50 home runs, Cecil Fielder matching it, and the juice ball, the baseball, but not the soccer ball until...
You know, the ball being more tightly wound down at near slave labor conditions down in Haiti and a neighboring country so that it's a rabbit ball that's never spoken of with all the other...
It all comes back to the class struggle, doesn't it?
Well, it actually so often does, but it's directly related to sport here, Hal, to soccer, because you see how the games are going with this new ball, with this rabbit ball.
This let's bring it back here. That the ball really is a factor in that you're not just seeing goalies complain about it. You're seeing the ball dip in a way that really is messing with keepers in a way that's real, not just sort of within the fellowship of keepers.
But not just keepers. By the way, are we on? Are we recording?
Everything's recorded.
Okay, very good. Next time, let me know. thanks very much. I mean, I'm used to having my phone tapped, Pluto, but, you know, not quite like this. But, Hal, I see it throughout the game. Now, I don't think I'm seeing quite as much as the next guy. I've seen parts of four games now, and I'm glad, you know, with the limited selection I've had. But we're seeing it on all kinds of touches, all through the field.
Yeah.
All over the field. And, in fact, in this game we just saw, I mean, there's just moment after another.
Well,
these guys are not able to control the ball.
No,
and,
you see it mostly with keepers like hitting the ball back and forth to each other's box like tennis. And the ball goes so far that they can't.
That is, it's part of something that has been a continuum in sports and also more greatly in society. It's the, you know, under the myth of progress, introduction of technologies which radically alter the practice of something. Now, of course, in your sport, golf, you could talk all about it, the ball, the clubs, the size of the clubs. In the sport I practiced as an individual with tennis, straight up. You know, I played tennis seven times in the last 15 years, but I was a star tennis player. It was hard to hit an overhead, the least practice shot in a game. Man, you had to be fully concentrated to do that. It is hard with the modern tennis racket, it's hard to miss one. All you got to do is get the damn racket on the ball, and, you know, you're going to hit an effective shot.
Yeah.
The game is utterly different, and as with the rabbit ball in baseball, this is the same idea. The owners wanting to bring more spectacle, more of the spectacular, you know, to excite the consumer. It's what's happening here. Soccer, this game where goals are, you know, and in fact, it has ricocheted on them. It hasn't worked out because in the first games we're seeing, these guys can't get the ball on goal. It's not producing more goals, it's producing fewer.
Exactly. I think 23 goals in the first round of the first round, if you will. Once everyone had played a game, only 23 goals, whereas normally you get 30 to 35 goals.
Let's touch quickly on that Spain game, because I happen to see how the last I happen to see most of the game. Spain's desperate toward the end of the game. They do have, you know, it's a desperate team, as you know what's happening. They need a goal. Mm-hmm. They need that 1 point. So there was a cross at one point that went from the far side all the way over into the box, and all the Spanish people are crowded in, but a Spanish player has the chance to make a simple volley back in front of the goal mouth that something could happen, some good thing could happen. The volley goes directly in the air over the touchline. He absolutely cannot control it. Mind you, it ain't Zinedine Zidane touching the ball, but this is, you know, one of the best players for one of the best selections in the world. As well, there was another chance for goal. It was a real chance for goal. It was that marvelous chest through pass the attacker paid to your boy El Nino Torres, and it was a through pass, what's called in Spanish El Pase de la Muerte, the pass of death. That was brilliantly done.
Yeah.
Brilliantly done with the chest, and Torres had the lead on the defender, but as you saw, on his second touch of the ball, as he's going at top speed, just dribbling the ball, he mistouched it, and the ball went flying, whoosh, over the end line. You know, end of story.
Well, I think that we could chalk that up more credibly to the fact that Torres hasn't been in a game competitively for about 8 weeks. He had knee surgery, after all, and he's not even starting. He came on as a late substitution because they were desperate, as you say. I didn't chalk that up to the ball. I chalked that up to his rustiness.
Rustiness and, I think, nerves there, actually, because, you know, it was an anxious moment. He knew, God, I've got to get ahead of this guy. But we see the result of the ball. When do you think the players of the World Cup got a chance to touch this damn ball for the first time?
Well, weren't they supplied with balls, you know, for the week or two that they showed up early? But that's probably it.
Yeah, it's like a month maybe, huh, max?
Hey, let's step back again here. I want to get a sense from you about the enormous expectation that is sitting all around the Spanish team now more than ever. Do you have a sense for it?
You bet. And mind you, everything is different right now as we speak than 36 hours ago.
That's right.
When this was and had to have been, it was an extremely confident home nation and certainly a very confident team, no matter that. As you were rightly identifying in his previous weeks, recognizing that Torres is really a key guy. You need someone who knows how to finish, someone who can just get it done, someone who scores important goals, not just goals.
But was it really a confident nation? Because as we know, there are nations that are overconfident, England, and nations that are truly confident of what will happen in a tournament, Germany. Where does Spain fall along there? Because they are European champions, but they've always failed at this level.
And you know, there's a fatalistic sort of mentality, no matter the victory in the European championships of a couple of years ago, that was historic. You know, they beat Italy in a major competition for the first time since the first time since World War I.
Yeah.
I mean, it was unbelievable for them. That was the huge hurdle. And then before handling the other team in the semi and the surprise Russian team in the final. But yes, a confident nation, and for lots of reasons, and it brings us beyond the borders of just soccer. World champion in basketball. Barca with its two European, Madrid with its great showings at the club level. Even Fernando Alonso, you know, who's won the title as the best race car driver in Formula One, also numerous champions in motorcycle and tennis, numerous tennis champions, male and female. So many things that, as this is a truly great sporting nation, it's become that. This country of 40 million people was the best first division league in Europe Well, a lot of people argue, and quite convincingly, that it's La Liga, that the best football in the world is played in Spain. I wonder what you think, if your prejudice lies or your preference lies with the English league.
The English league is more diverse, and that's what, if anything, makes the English league better. It's the fact that they attract more high-priced talent. That doesn't necessarily mean it attracts the best talent. In a uniform way. I guess, you know, it's interesting watching the German league and Germany itself. I mean, one of the things that's interesting about the German team is that there are so many naturalized Germans on it. There's Turks, there's Poles, there's a fellow named Kakao who plays for the German national team now, in addition to Mario Gomez, whose father was a Spaniard. But, you know, the Bundesliga draws all the good players from the Czech Republic, from Poland, from Bulgaria. If you're a great player in Central Europe, you aspire to the Bundesliga. Now, if you are a great player in Argentina, you aspire to La Liga. That's where you want to go.
I actually don't know how true that is, Val. Knowing Argentinians very well, having many Argentinian brothers in Barcelona and Catalonia, and with whom I went up to Germany for the World Cup 4 years ago, knowing a good deal about Argentinian pride and just how strong that league is, you know, there's sort of an arc to a star player's career. You got to make your name, get a reputation, and then get bought by an increasingly bigger team, you know, to a grande. Now, the richest clubs in Europe are richer than the richest clubs in South America, but there is that hierarchical separation among them as well.
Yeah,
I don't want to dispute it too strongly.
There's such a strong Italian component to Argentinian culture that
as well,
many of those guys, like, you know, will go to Italy. But I guess the point I'm making is that La Liga draws on the greater sort of
the Spanish-speaking diaspora.
Yes, exactly. So I think, and that
here's
helps
something. Let me ask you about that, Hal. I didn't see Brazil play. But in terms of the Brazilian 23 players, or the starting 11, how many are still playing down in Brazil, if you could just estimate?
Oh, it's a good question.
That would be telling. That would be telling.
Well,
anyway, going back to Spain, Hal, and thinking on this, and about the confidence of the country, the confidence of the team, I think there was no doubt anywhere except for the... You know, someone who had a dark sense of humor, we're getting a bit of an echo now, but it's gone away, that everyone thought that Spain was going to handle Switzerland. Switzerland had never beaten Spain. And so absolutely they were going to show their class, their categoria there.
I mean, Uruguay can shut a game down. The Swiss can clearly shut a game down.
Well, was that clear before yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, the Swiss, I believe I'm correct in saying that the Swiss... at the 2006 World Cup, did not concede a goal.
Yeah, they do qualify. They do succeed in qualifying.
They're just like you'd expect from the Swiss. They're not flashy, but they're extremely competent. And if you give them an inch, they'll take a mile, a goal, and then you have to score against them, which is difficult. I was impressed, though, with Uruguay. Did you see them play South Africa last night? It was sad to see the whole nation sort of deflate, but... the Uruguayans were brilliant.
Yeah, they're better. I happened to see their first goal, which was a stroke of luck. The ball, it's rebote, a rebound in Spanish. Forlan, the Atletico Madrid number 10, and the number 10 for Uruguay, and truly a great world-class striker. He cracks the ball, and it gets the lucky break, the lucky deflection, and there's nothing the goalkeeper can do. And so the host nation, by bad luck, is now behind the... as we say in English.
Interesting situation in that group. Uruguay will play Mexico in the final match. A tie puts them both through.
It's a classic situation in the World Cup. Some extraordinarily cynical things have happened. I remember myself as a 16-year-old in the summer of 1982 as a tennis teacher at Germany's largest hotel when the World Cup in Spain... when Austria and Germany in the third and final game of the first round, but Austria and Germany played to a 0-0 draw in which they just passed the ball among each other with no intention whatsoever to score a goal so that they both could gain. And so, obviously, France And South Africa will be playing a tope, full blast, will be playing full on for the 3 points and for the victory. And then we shall see. We shall see how Mexico and their opponent Uruguay, who have in common that they're both Spanish-speaking nations, that they're both, you know, South American, if you were, south of the border, but they're, you know, part of the Americas. We'll see how they comport themselves. We'll see how they play.
Well, first of all, do you know the name of the name they've given to this game? The German and Austrian game, the one they tied on purpose? Do you know the name? The purposeful tie is called the Nichtengerichtspacht von Gijon, or the Schande von Gijon. The game was played in Gijon, and it's the non-aggression pact of Gijon.
Yeah.
You're right, at the expense of Algeria.
Right. I was going to say Algeria, mate, but I guess I didn't risk it.
But to bring it back again on point, all the ingredients are there for this to happen. However, the first place team from Group A is slated to play the second place team from Group B. So there's clearly an incentive to play for the group title, because the first place team from Group B is almost certainly going to be Argentina.
And Argentina is in the group with, I don't have it in front of me.
South Korea, Greece, and Nigeria. So I believe that the Argentinians have already qualified for the round 16 in anything but an utter, you know, bizarro circumstance. They will win the group. So
they'll be playing to win.
Yes.
And also,
there's lots of incentive for the Uruguayans and the Mexicans not to play Argentina.
Especially more incentive for the Uruguayans, because they share the river. They're on different sides of that river.
Yes.
I mean, they're absolute neighbors.
Is that not the River Plata?
Plata.
What about those Mexicans versus France? Impressive.
They were clearly better.
They certainly were. Did you see the shot of the crowd in Mexico City when they scored that goal?
I would have liked to.
Oh,
I would have liked to.
Pandemonium.
This is the strongest Mexican team I think I've seen. Some people have spoken about it being as strong a team as Mexico has had. Have you heard that, Hal?
I think that I've seen it written. It's the best team they've ever brought to a World Cup. They've gotten to the quarterfinals twice, but both times they were at home. And this team is truly strong. I saw them play a warm-up match against England at Wembley, and it's really funny to watch Mexico play European teams. It shows you what a European style the U.S. plays.
Right.
Because they play the Mexicans have all the possession, and the U.S. pretty much grants it to them, and they just are determined to counterattack. Today, France was determined to do nothing at all.
One significant thing with this team that the coach did, and it's been on the lips of so many I talk to, and again, I'm among many members of La Raza, and I'm talking footy with them, and as we've been coming up to the World Cup, was that he took the pretty boy goalkeeper who's in all the advertisements.
Yes.
And who's a national, he's one of the most popular athletes. Maybe he might be the most popular. The great female golfer has retired. Maybe the most best known with the curly hair. Ochoa, that's his name, right?
Yeah.
Everyone I've spoken to in the Mission District, every football fan, every Mexican football fan was recognizing, hey, he should not be the number one keeper for our country. So that was a good decision by Aguirre. In fact, I've had people make plain that, you know, Ochoa really doesn't even deserve to be the third keeper on the team.
Is that really true?
Well, I've heard that opinion stated unequivocally. But they look good. The football, they're looking good. And Dos Santos is an impressive player up front, but he's just bloody good on the ball. And with ideas, this Mexican team has ideas, as they say in Spanish. And they play a very attractive game. They dominated this French team. And, of course, all these players, not just from Ribéry on down, I mean, these guys are high-level European players. We see many Mexican players having great success in Europe, something that warms my heart, I know.
More and more, it is an interesting dynamic there, too, where the Mexicans' experience in Europe is distinct from the rest of South Americans There are lots of South Americans who have gone to Europe and to Spain and done well, but very few Mexicans have really made it. You know, Hugo Sanchez did, Marquez did, but for a soccer-playing nation that is so big and has such an accomplished league, very few Mexicans go abroad with success until very recently. So I'm going to ask you, where are you going to watch the U.S. Slovenia game tomorrow?
I have no plans to watch that game. What time is that game?
It's on at 7 o'clock Pacific Standard Time.
I will not be watching that game. I saw that they won the game, Slovenia, right?
They did. They looked horrible and beat Algeria on a very bad goal. They didn't look very good, but they're supposed to be pretty capable.
Okay, bud. So, Pluto, I reckon we should do this some more.
Let's do it again. I'll be in touch next week.
All right, brother.
Stephen Myers, thank you for joining us on the Unsightly American Soccer Podcast.
It's a pleasure, Hal. It's always been great talking sports with you. I hardly know someone who does it better. And give my warmest regards to the still stranger, if it's a fair sharing.
I will indeed.
All right, then, brother.
Hey, good night.
Peace out.